Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran. I want to welcome you to another edition of the New Media Show, officially on our new newmediashow.com website. Rob, welcome. Welcome this morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Todd. I had a little kind of Skype update this morning that kind of delayed me a little bit, but I guess when Skype decides they're going to upgrade, they're going to upgrade.
Well, that's okay, because I was like looking at the upper Skype monitor thinking, where's Dave? Where's our guest? And I was like, why isn't he connecting? And then I looked down and the router for that internet was turned off.
Oh, great. Okay.
So he couldn't have got in if he wanted. But without further ado, Dave Insuto, good morning. Welcome to the New Media Show.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Todd, Rob, good to see you guys.
Good to see you too. Hey, we saw Boss Jock on our kind of lanyards at the Podcast Movement, but I don't know, Dave, did you attend?
No, I didn't attend. I was really bummed
out.
Yeah,
I didn't think so.
We sponsored but couldn't be there. It was, you know, it seemed like such an exciting event, but unfortunately, things conspired against being down there. So
well, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about Boss Jock, and we'll definitely want to deep into the weeds on that topic as we go on.
Yes.
But I did want to, as we started out here this morning, make all of the audience members aware that we finally, we've been talking about it for months, and I finally basically did the template myself. We're now on our own domain. And what I did was, you know, just turns out that Angela was just too slammed. And, so I, you know, I've kind of poo-pooed Studio Press for years. I've never been a big, you know, fan of these, you know, I guess for a better word, you know, build your own type of thing. And what an idiot. I should have been doing it before, because I threw this together. Well, I shouldn't say quick. I did a bunch of modifications to it. It's not quite there yet, but it's clean. It loads fast. I guess that's the main thing. The media is right there where we want it, so we can just build from here. I guess that's the most important thing. And of course, we've got the live portion on its own page now. So for those folks that want to watch live in the future, we're going to be on newmediashow.com/live is where the actual video will be, instead of back over on Geek News Central. So it's great to be on the new website. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, it's great that we're actually building a brand around the show, and it has its own kind of separate site. I think it's there's things that we can do kind of on the social media side and to drive people to that as a destination, you know, in the future. I think we even talked about even other types of content actually maybe being posted in there too. So
yeah, absolutely. And we've also got a newsletter now. The link is not on the site yet. I'll have the link up a little bit later today, but I created that last night. So people, if they want to sign up for the newsletter, they can. What we'll do is we'll send emails out post show, when the post goes up online, let you know that the episode has been published. So basically, it's at newmediashow.com/newsletter, but I'll have a hard link on the website for it. But overall, not bad for a non-designer. I guess that's the best way to put it. And, you know, I hate to say it, but for guys like me that just really have no coding skills, you know, WordPress, the Studio Press guys do a pretty good job. $99 for the template, and then where the gitch is in the add-on is where you really, if you really want to tweak it, you buy this $200 tweaking tool, and so you basically have paid what you would probably have started to pay a developer. You know, I figured that the design that I had originally was going to cost me $1,000 or $2,000 to roll out, so it's not exactly where I want it to be, but it is what it is. We're there now, and we're going to live with it for a little bit. But anyway, I digress. Let's get caught up with Dave. Dave, man, it's been a while, man. I think that
I'm out of the loop.
I don't know where the last time I saw you at. I saw you somewhere, maybe at New Media Expo or something. Yeah, I think that was a year ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the last time I saw him. Yep.
So we missed the last NMX.
Yeah. So what's going on with, you know, Boss Jock's been that's been your kind of your baby here recently. What's going on with that?
that's the new baby. We've been working on a we're moving into a phase of sort of simplifications. So, you know, we're trying to it's good. We hit a certain we hit like 5,000 units about a year ago or something like that. That was like a big milestone. So we've kind of tuned into the different types of users that we get. And right now we're in a mode to sort of focus on what we're hearing from education, like ed tech people, and feedback from classroom and students and that sort of thing. So we're in a phase of simplification and addressing some, you know, better use in the classroom stuff. Then we're going to double down on the power user things. So,
and for the listener that doesn't know, you know, you've got a long history in the podcasting space, being, you know, one of the co-founders of Libsyn, and you know, you've been in the space from the beginning. And of course, maybe some folks don't know what's Boss Jock actually do, for those that are like not aware of it from the very beginning.
Well, it's a recording podcast recording app where the production is done in real time, kind of like you would do in a you know, college radio station. So you hit record and you trigger your music and you talk over your music and everything is mixed in real time. So, you know, the focus is sort of this real time production that once you're done, it's instantly ready for publishing to however you're going to publish it, SoundCloud or Blueberry or Libsyn, you know, those sort of things.
Right.
So it's sort of a you know, a recorder modeled after radio production, I guess. And that's why the name Boss Jock, which is, you know, we're a nod to classic guys on the radio.
You know, and the thing that's cool about this is, and I think the thing that most people don't understand is that with the, like, and I'm assuming this works with like maybe iMic and some of the other commercially available microphones and stuff.
Yep.
Is that the quality on this thing is just about, or maybe even equal to what you would get on a basically a computer, right?
And we're sneaking in processing that the user isn't aware about. So I think oftentimes they can get a better result out of the box, sort of. You know, we have a compressor that the mic is being routed through, and then it's mixed together with the music beds or sound effects, and then it all drives a limiter. So the kind of mastering stuff that somebody would do usually in post-processing is done in real time. So for somebody who doesn't have the time or potentially isn't aware of the kind of mastering things you need to do in the processing, we sort of take care of that for them behind the scenes. So I think in some circumstances, if you get a good microphone, like, of course, everyone loves the ATR 2100, right? You know, $35 Audio-Technica mic. You can plug that into your iPhone or your iPad. And, you know, I think the results can be better sometimes.
So how do they actually – so obviously the ATR wasn't originally designed to go into the iPad. You have to have some interconnects there, don't you?
Yeah, Apple makes – originally they made something called the camera connector kit, which was to connect your camera and suck your photos into the iPad. But people figured out on – there's sort of this scene of music creators on the iPad and iPhone, and they figured out that if you connected a USB audio device, it could be a microphone, it could be an interface with, you know, multiple microphones, or even something like a USB keyboard. That all that stuff works over this camera connector kit. So Apple never sort of disabled it, and as of iOS 7, originally it only worked for the iPad, but as of iOS 7, it started working for the iPhone as well. So you can literally take an ATR 2100, connect the USB to the camera connector kit, which is basically a little dongle that gives you a USB connect, and it works, and it works really well.
Oh, that is, you know, to be honest with you, Rob, did you know about that? I didn't even know that there was the camera connector kit that would, I didn't even know about that particular interconnect. So,
yeah, I did. And well, and there's mics too that you can just plug right into that and be able to record, you know, some high quality audio. I mean, I played around it, you know, with it on my iPhone as well, and it's, you know, the audio quality is just unbelievable. And it kind of gets back to, yeah, I'm hearing more and more people wanting to get really high quality portable recording kind of system is placed where they have an iPad or their iPhone, and they just plug in a couple of mics and they can do high quality, you know, podcasts right into their phone. They don't have to get expensive equipment or anything like that. I mean, a lot of the mics that just plug into the iPhone and work with the Boss Jock are, you know, less than $100, and they sound fantastic. So
and I also like to add that one of the tricks that we figured out, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, is that Apple does this processing with the microphone on here, and it's sort of the lowest common denominator. They chop off the low end, they drive it through a compressor aggressively, and that's because they don't know if people are talking into the phone like this or like this. But one of the features in Boss Jock, you can disable the iOS processing, and out of nowhere, this little microphone comes alive. So, you know, if you consciously adjust it, you can actually adjust the gain that's in the microphone just like you would on a mixing board. And you can actually get fantastic results with just the iPhone microphone. So, that's, you know, funny. And I mean, it totally gets the job done, more than gets the job done. So you don't even need, in a lot of circumstances, a good microphone. And there's something so simple, and you see this all the time, you know, in sports, there's always somebody just holding their iPhone out there. But there's ways that you can unlock the full potential of the mic, and it's pretty amazing. We've published a few articles on that. So, you know, really, the equipment is, you know, is not even needed in some circumstances. But yeah, everything from $30 microphones to $200, $250 microphones. If you want to put the Heil PR40 and plug it into your iPhone, you can do that now. And you can do it digitally.
Yeah, that's which cool. Is amazing. So you go to XLR to a converter. There's a couple of steps, but you can get there. That's
yeah, and a digital connection too, yeah. Which is amazing. Because before, everybody was piping it through the headphone jack.
Yeah,
and that works. But there's better ways to do it.
So you're kind of dependent, though. Were you like holding your breath on iOS 7 to see what they did and if they were going to change things or lock something out? I'm sure they wouldn't, because that just going to kill everyone, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the fact that microphones and, like I said, you know, musical keyboards can be connected. There's all these things that weren't designed to work, or at least they're not advertising it. They work very well, turning iOS devices into really rich media creation devices.
Yeah, I had used I've got some review units here. I think I've got an iRig and some other stuff. I've got the little ones that hook up the little microphones, hook onto the back of the, well, actually, you know, plug right into the Thunderbolt port. And, I've used those before, but the software that, I'll be honest with you, that they provided, you know, it sucked, you know, it really did. But, that's kind of cool. So you can actually go with those little mini plug-in recorders too as a mic, as a, you know, that's would be kind of like the low end next step up. And then you could go full mic too. It sure simplifies the rig that you have to carry around if you're doing a mobile show, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And simpler the better sometimes.
Yeah. And at the same time, you've got, you know, I'm looking through this, and I tried this with my audience on my tech show, but they slaughtered me I was using some sound effects from time to time, and after, you know, 800 some episodes, and when I introduced the sound effects, they were like, no, that has to go. But you've got it so that you can set up, as you said, you got your intro, you got the overlay with the music, and then if you want, you can, you know, you can set up some sound beds to put in there. To make a noise or to make a bark or whatever it may be, that's pretty cool too. So
trim up audio feedback. That's a good way, because we sort of have quick tools that you can load up a cart with. Somebody sent you, you know, a piece of audio, and you can trim that up and move it into multiple carts. You know, it's basically a soundboard integration.
Yeah, and so basically, do you then just, someone sticks a SD card into the or they can get it via email probably, or SD card on the actual camera connector kit? Is that where, how you, what's the easiest way for people to ingest the audio then? Because like, if I have someone send me an audio comment, what's the, kind of the process?
If it came in via email, like old school K7 or whatever, you just open in
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those long taps inside of the email.
Right.
Where it, you can say open in, and then it gives you a selection of apps that support that.
Oh,
you would see Boss Jock
in there.
Ingest it that way.
Oh, that's really cool. That is really cool. And I can be honest with you, Dave, I apologize. I had not really paid attention too much to the software because I really hadn't had a need for it. But as I look at this, now you really want to get this thing crazy off the hook. add a video component to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hope we'll get there. You know, it's sort of it's the kind of thing where there's all these places we want to go with it. Video would totally be one of them, I think.
Yeah, because
it would be cool.
You know, because what happens now with video stuff is you just have to record the video, and then if you want to do any lower thirds or you want to roll in any intros or something like that, if you could come up with the same, this thing would, well, you know, it's awesome the way it is, but I'm just thinking, wow, it would be even, you know, it'd be even more cool. Because I've been using the, I've got one of these things where you stick the iPad in, it's got a lens on it, and been using that for interviews and stuff. But this is really cool.
Todd, you never know. You could completely replace your TriCaster with a an iPad at some point, right? Well, is that what you're thinking?
Well,
is that where you're going here?
No, way I'm going is you know, for example, I spend so much time in post editing. For CES, when we go do an interview, you know, bust out the camera, you know, you record the 5-minute interview, but would that not be slick if it's just like I roll my 15-second interview prior to the, you know, before I'm doing interview this dude, and it's, you know, basically it's just like Dave says, I'm a big fan of press record and press stop and be done. That's my, you know, that's the way I roll here, you know. So if the same thing could be built on the video side where you're using an iPad, where I've just got this thing mounted to a tripod on one of these units that holds an iPad, has a camera in it. You know, the guy that's running the iPad would just sit there and say, okay, intro, you know, he's doing the wave signal and go as it transitions to video. And you are at the end, you'd roll your post edit credits and you're done. You know, you push to YouTube or wherever you want that to go.
You got to figure, when we started building Boss Jock, we were kind of trying to figure out what the ceiling was as far as processing in real time. But, you know, geez, with all these, you know, now that we have 64-bit processors, I'm sure we're either there, you know, or soon to be there as far as doing that video processing.
Yeah, and I think, didn't we hear an announcement that there's going to be eight core processors on phones coming pretty soon? So.
That's wild.
Yeah. I was down at Podcast Movement, and I did an interview on a podcast, and I saw them, a guy using a Zoom IQ5. I don't know if you can see it here.
Yep.
But
I've got one of those.
But it just mounts to the top of your of your iPhone.
And the cool thing about that mic, Rob, is you can do kind of like this. You don't have to worry about flipping it over. You can talk on one side, then you can go back to the person and.
Exactly.
And
it's 360-degree ball that actually records at all angles. Yeah.
And it's got some things where you can do just 180 and try to isolate the other two sectors. So, it's pretty slick. So, Dave, I'm just getting a little techie here on this, but where are you guys? How are you guys sitting on a threshold for CPU usage? Is this thing a battery pig, or how does it? How much of a?
Up until this point, we kept it really conservative, the shipping product right now works on a 3GS and an original iPad. So we did as much as we could to straddle the entire, and that includes iOS 5, iOS 6, and iOS 7. So that's kind of a nightmare. So at some point, we're going to have to cut the cord and refocus on, everything 4S or maybe even 5 forward. So it's always that, figuring out that balancing act of what to support. But we've kept it pretty light, and therefore the battery usage, as low as possible. Yep.
Yeah, because...
And you get it, we can do an hour... 2 hours, 3 hours, you can sit there, you know, plenty of time. So with a nice full battery, you shouldn't run into any battery issues. You know, I guess it also depends on the type of device you connect to it. For example, my favorite microphone, which I'm using here, is the Apogee mic.
Yeah.
And, you know, that seems to sip battery life. But I think the ATR2100 takes a little bit more, a little more juice. And certain microphones like the Blue Yeti, for example, if you plug that into an iPad or an iPhone, it actually doesn't work because it requires so much bus power from the USB.
And they haven't been able to break that out yet.
Bingo. Yeah. So the workaround there is you can use a powered USB hub in between. But at that point, you're getting complex.
Yeah, and you're not portable. I should stop. This does not have to be a portable rig. This could be a full blown. You know, I just think about being in hotel rooms, and like. Yeah, I'm going to buy this just because simply when I travel, there's no reason. I get this bag. You know, I used to do video when I've traveled, and I was literally carrying a 5U roll case. That's what went with me. And, you know, that thing was getting beat up. You know, I had like, $5,000 worth of gear in this thing, and I'm putting it on the airlines every 2 weeks. And you know, it just, you know, you come off, I prayed every time I come out of the chute on the airlines, we'd be missing the front panel, and then we'd have to go look for it. Buttons would be busted. You know, it got old. So I said, I'm not doing it. I'm not traveling no more. So now I travel with just a little bag, but there's no reason why the iPad automatically goes in my bag anyway. So why not just carry a mic and, a couple little small accessories? And I go from this to, it makes a lot of sense.
You're going to do production, I prefer. I mean, obviously, the focus of this app is to sort of get it done in one shot, right. Just like you do it, and which is fun because I'm a procrastinator. So that's sort of the driving force. If I have to do post production, oftentimes just doesn't happen. But that said, there's a ton of great software out there. You know, $10 gets you this app called Multitrack DAW, and I prefer cutting audio on that. And I've worked, I've worked with desktop PCs and editing and mastering, since the 90s. And I much prefer getting my hands on there. And Multitrack DAW is so fast and fluid, so if you're looking for a good multi-tracker, Multitrack DAW is my favorite. And I know a lot of people, Rob Walsh, for example, will recommend Aria. And that's good, too. And that has, it's in a different league as far as its processing is concerned, because it actually has VST plugins, the same ones you would get in Ableton Live or Pro Tools. They've worked with those companies. And that's like a $40 application. And it's great, but this Multitrack DAW is like so light and quick, and you just, working with your fingers, it feels right. So in some circumstances, I think the iPad is the better interface to work with certain types of media. And, you get in a groove. It's that sort of thing. It gets out of your way. In our case, we're designing around like a soundboard. And, a soundboard makes more sense on an iPad than it does on your laptop.
Yeah.
It's easier just to touch things and trigger them.
And, and if you're just, like when I go on the road, I don't need all the extra processing. I just need to do an audio recording. And I want a few effects and, the intro, that's just an audio thing. I splice it in here now. I just cut and paste it into the system now. But if I was on the road and I just played the intro, did the show, annoying my audience with a few chirps or beeps or whatever it may be, and could play the listener audio, which, that, believe it or not, that was always a pain to do. I'd be, okay, well, we're going to hear from listener X, and I'd wait 3 seconds and then start talking again because, then I'd go cut and paste the audio in. But with this, you could just play it and I'm assume bring them down and talk over them if you wanted to. And, so really, really cool.
Yeah. We have a semi-auto function. So when you trigger the microphone, it actually ducks the music bed. Or the background audio bed. But yeah, you can also individually do that stuff. But also, no hum, no problem, because you're not plugging into a wall.
Yeah.
You know, we've all had that circumstance where you got a, you know, a fluorescent light that's causing a hum or something, you know, something weird, AC kicks in. And when you're not plugged into the wall, you know, and that also allows you to go in the closet with the coats. So if you need to get that really vital, you know, voiceover, you know, it becomes a better way to do it, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say hum because on my last show Thursday, you know, I'm so used to just coming in here and firing things up and go, you know, it's at the knock on wood here. The system's been pretty rock solid. But last Thursday, and I've got my show prep done, I fire everything up and I'm put the headset on my hair. I'm like, oh. Because, you know, all of a sudden, where is that, you know, and you
with the power thing usually, right?
Yeah, with the wire stack I have here, I'm like, oh, my God, where is it? Now, you know, I have been pretty anal. I mean, you know, my background was electronics anyway. So there is physical separation between audio lines and power lines. There's at least 6 to 9 inches between. And, you know, and people come in my house like, why do you have two runs of cables? That's power. That's audio or that's video. Yep. They're separate. And I, you know, and they're like, you know, and for the average person, they don't know. But I got to think, I'm like, I ran a new cable over here. And sure enough, right on the back side of this monitor, there was a power cable that was a little too close to an audio line, and I was getting the, you know, feed through. And
you're doing, I saw on Google that, you know, you're experimenting with wireless HDMI and that sort of thing. Yeah. So you're trying to find ways to get rid of those wires, huh?
Yeah, that wireless HDMI is it's pretty fantastic, man, especially when, you know, wives are funny about cables.
Oh boy, we're getting the weeds now.
They'll put up with a power cable plugging into the wall because it has to be there. But when it comes to like those other lines that you're like, hey, I need to pull some carpet up to drop this HD, you know, you get that look.
There you go.
Yeah. So this wireless HDMI stuff is pretty impressive. It really is. It's a game changer for guys. You know, here's the thing. It's a little pricey, but fellas, if you've had to punch a hole in a wall and run something up behind, spend the $230 and buy the wireless and just don't even tell her. It's part of the cost of the TV. I'm serious. It makes a big delta. But yeah, if you see the cable mess here, it's nuts.
Todd, I think I just saw a spike in the divorce rates. Just based on that one recommendation, just buy it. Don't talk to him.
Yeah, don't.
Hey Dave, I wanted to ask you. This is the elephant in the room, but are you working on an Android version of this?
No, we'd like to.
That was a quick answer.
I know we get a lot of requests for it. I think Android is amazing. We're in such a cool time of the best competition between these tech companies. It's so awesome. So the spirit of Android, I love it. We built so heavily on iOS libraries. That was part of the how we got an app out was, you know, Apple had such a rich, you know, sub layer of audio stuff that they had laid that Android just didn't have. So, you know, it would take a huge amount of work. So I hope we get to do it. We have one. It's me and Ed. Ed Filiwat is my partner, and he's a genius. But we have to pick our battles like anything, you know. So we look at things like Android and OS X going to the Mac, that sort of thing. It's all very attractive, but we have to ask ourselves, you know, where the biggest audience is, and then also what's technically feasible. And there's just, you know, and this may be slightly out of date because Android continues to improve this, but the latency in Android is higher than the latency on iOS. So in iOS, we can get it down to like 2.8 milliseconds, so under 3 milliseconds.
Right.
And one of the things we did, you know, before we sort of launched in this project was to see, could we let the user listen to his own voice after it's run through, you know, the processing and mixed with the audio and it not be a problem so that psychologically it doesn't mess with their head, you know?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we could do that. We could get when we launched, we could get 6 milliseconds on the iPhone. And as the newer processors came out, we got it down to 3 milliseconds. That's really important. And now last I checked, and I'm a little bit out of date, but as of about a year ago, Android was still over 10 milliseconds. So for Boss Jock, which encourages the user to monitor their voice in real time, like somebody would in a studio,
yeah,
it may not make as much sense to jump to the Android platform. Now, we know that's going to change. So, you know, once we get this company off the launch pad, then yeah, absolutely, it's an attractive target to go for, you know, and we want to be there. But at this point, we're just being very careful about what we develop and the direction that we go. And, you know, I'm useless. Ed's the only, you know, he's doing all the crafting of the application. So,
so know, baby what's steps the, is
where we are.
What's the real issue with the Android on that side, on the latency? Is it an operating system kind of flaw, or is it you know, a processor? Is it a combination of the two on those types of devices? Or what's the core reason?
I'd liken it to the way that they didn't have the same animation subsystem for smooth scrolling and that sort of thing. And they got there. But, you know, people draw the comparison to, you know, Apple was pretty much butter smooth out of the gate. And part of the reason was, you know, back in 2001, they're doing, you know, Quartz Extreme or whatever it was. So they had already been working on these animations. And at the time, it seemed ridiculous because OS X was slow and Windows was fast. And, you know, we wondered why the heck were they doing all this animation stuff. But here it is, you know, years later, 10 years later or 8 years later, it comes to fruition in iOS. So they had spent a long time developing that subsystem of animations. And, you know, same goes for audio. The audio units thing the foundation they laid in OS X translated to iOS. And that's a rich, mature thing to build on. So, you know, Android now it's so much smoother, but I feel like it's the same thing. They just haven't built those low-level systems because they're targeting, you know, the gigantic market. And again, it's like I'm the only kind of nerd, or, you know, 3 years ago, I'm the nerd trying to connect all the microphones to my iPhone just because most people are just playing, you know, Candy Crush, right? So they're picking their battles as well. But it just really has to do with the maturity of the, you know, the plumbing of the OSs.
You know what's interesting on this discussion on latency is that when I first started doing the video on this show, the way the pipeline works here is the video goes directly to the TriCaster and the audio goes through a mixer, then to the TriCaster. And I was running an analog mixer at the time. And what was really going on with that is that you in video, about 3 frames, I mean, if you're doing 30 frames per second, about 3 frames is what you can afford before what your mouth is doing doesn't match what people are hearing. And it's annoying. You've always seen it when there's someone been a little bit of a lag where the, you know, the voice leads the video or vice versa. And what I found was that we end up having to upgrade the mixer to go to is a better Mackie mixer with digital processing, with USB connections, or FireWire essentially, to be able to get
to keep
the,
up
to keep up to keep the latency down. And you know, and I you think this is crazy, but I was looking at length of cables. Now at the speed of light, where, you know, you don't really have an impact on a cable. It happens inside the box, you know, when there's something going on and the output coming back out. But they're always, you know, when you're just doing audio alone, who cares, right? Who cares if it's a little behind? But if you had your headset plugged in a mixer and, like Dave said, you were far enough along on the latency that it just totally screws you up. You can't talk. Your brain doesn't, like, what's going on? Yeah. And oftentimes I would get into a situation where something like that would happen. I'd have to just unplug the headset. That's the only way you can continue. Yep. You just can't otherwise. So, but on post-processing on video, what I was doing at that time was I would get those, and I would, do you ever see those clapperboards? Well, you know what the reason for the clapper boards was? It wasn't primarily, it wasn't always just to put, this is what video this is. That was to put a sound into the audio track so that when the guy had the video and he had the audio, he could
sync them up.
He could sync them, yeah. You know? So, you know, for a while here, I was doing that when I started the show so that I would have a line. And it just right now, I can look right at an audio recording and see that line. And if you take the video and it has its own audio track, you kill the video audio track, you put the audio track there, and boom, you're lined up and you're good. But that 2 or 3 seconds, or that not 2 or 3 seconds, that latency is a killer. And Dave, I'm sure you guys racked your head on that for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, that was, well, I mean, that was the aha was that we could do it.
Right.
Was that the, because, you know, in a lot of ways, the design of Boss Jock was similar to what the setup that I used when I first started podcasting, which was I had my iBook, and then I would use the monitoring function of GarageBand to both, you know, bring my audio and process the audio, and then I'd use little QuickTime things, QuickTime players, multiple players in order to for music and that sort of thing.
Right.
But bottom line was the latency was worse back then in 2004 on my iBook, you know, than it was. 6 milliseconds is really pretty amazing, and 3 milliseconds is even better. It's kind of, and also it's funny sometimes. Funny how your brain works. Sometimes 5.8 milliseconds sounds better than 3 milliseconds. It's strange, but
that's weird.
You know, it's just one of those things. As a media producer, you know, when you're trying to do your art, you know, something like latency can really spoil the buzz, right? It takes you out of the moment. So, you know, we were pretty amazed that from the jump on a iPhone 3GS, we thought the latency was doable. And people have to get used to their voices when they're using our app. But oftentimes that's a good way to do it. And, you know, that's how guys in radio studios will work. And when somebody's recording an album, you know, they're monitoring. They get used to it. So I don't know. I think it's all about sort of finding ways to work and improve and be aware of how to improve your performance and your audio at the same time. You know, plugging in, but the equipment has to get out of the way, and things like latency and video and audio, you know, that's been the bane, and hum and the phantom hum. It's like the boogeyman of producing media, whether it's 1963 or 2005.
One thing I like too is you guys have developed the API on it so that when the guy is done, if he's hosting like with Libsyn or with us or wherever, there you push multiple locations, you can push that media and drop it into those hosting services, and basically it's waiting for them if they you know, if they're blogging or however they're going to do it, so
they can blast it right out.
That's
the way sense. I mean, this was always one of my concerns about podcasting.
And it's
that we're still having the same story where people are saying, how come it's more difficult than putting up a YouTube video?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And you're like, no, this is cooler. It's audio and, you know, more engaging, you know, signal to noise, but you got to do a lot of stuff. And it's not, you know, everyone can publish to YouTube, but why is it still so incredibly hard? And I think we're still a little complicated. Like, so at the end of Boss Jock, you got to punch in an FTP and figure out FTP stuff. It's still a little too difficult for normal people.
Yeah, and I have to agree, and that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why we did some things we did in PowerPress is like, just drag it, drop it, it'll upload, it'll get where it needs to be. That's all you need to know. How does it happen? Don't worry. That's what happens. And, you know, and same exact you know, thought process, Dave, really, because you know, and, you know, be honest with you, the support requirements are, you know, you try to look at anything, you know, you look like, what's my top 10 support questions are asked? Let's make it easier so that these support questions go away. So I'm not paying that guy that's answering the phone or doing the email responses or in the forums to have to, you know, let him focus on the more hard stuff. That guy that comes in has got this really weird problem, because he's got, you know, 82 plugins on his WordPress site, and you know, and that, believe it or not, that has happened. But you know, so it's a lot of focus on,
and we talk
content.
About control a lot. I mean, that's the thing that's so very important. Having your own domain, having, you know, control of your your personal brand, your website, your art, what, you know, however you perceive it. It's tough because we're always fighting this fight where we're trying to make things easier for people. We're trying to recommend them to, things that give them the biggest bang for the buck on the internet. But on the other hand, you know, we're always in the back of our mind saying, you know, don't put all your eggs in this basket. Make sure you have a, you know, an exit strategy. Make sure you control it. You know, it's tough because those two things are oftentimes very much at odds.
Yep.
Well, and like you were talking about you know, the simplicity of publishing to YouTube, that's the opposite of what podcasting is. I mean, it's, you know, you go there, they basically, YouTube pretty much takes care of everything for you. You know, so I guess there's probably a place for services that kind of take care of everything. And then there's other places kind of like what all three of us kind of gravitate towards, which is platforms that give you a lot of flexibility around quality, I think, and being able to control every aspect of it. But there's definitely a downside. And I think, you know, what's great about Boss Jock is that it basically, and early on in the podcasting space, there was a PC software that did a similar thing to this. I know my wife actually created a show for the Boston Legal TV show, basically using a very similar kind of software where she had her intros and she would plug in sound bites from the TV show and just she would just tap a button on the screen and it would play that segment. So I think it can be used for, you know, a lot of different production situations, and it goes way back to the early days of podcasting. But I think your point, Dave, is really good, is that, you know, if you want to do complex productions, sometimes this type of a solution isn't going to work for you, but I think more and more, I think, you know, you've built a software client that's very capable of doing just about everything that a podcaster would need. And I think it, you know, as we look at kind of, you know, like what's rumored now, larger iPads and probably, you know, apps, these type of apps being able to run on maybe a Mac or something like that at some point. I think it becomes a tool that could really propel podcasting forward and make good quality recordings.
And there's no editor in there. a top thing request is always to get an editor in there, and I think we'll get there eventually. But also, again, just want to shout out. There's such a rich, amazing community of developers on iOS right now doing audio stuff. And, you know, Twisted Wave is on there with an amazing two-track editor and multi-track DAW. And then just the sheer amount of audio creation tools like synthesizers and drum machines. And it's amazing. Right. And the software is so inexpensive. You know, you get these amazing synthesizers for under $10. It's insane. There's like a golden age happening right now. So, you know, even if our app isn't what people are looking for, what I think people should turn on to is that there's some amazing content creation stuff, real innovation that's happening on the iOS platform, you know, with independent developers right now. And if you know, that has, if people hadn't yet thought of their devices as content creation tools, they should really look into it, because it's magical and the price is right, you know, because when I was younger in my 20s, I did what all most of my peers did with regards to production stuff, which is steal software. And so I admit to that. This is my sins. You steal software because you cannot afford it.
Right.
You cannot afford the Waves plugins. You cannot afford, you know, $1,000 pieces of software.
Yep.
You stole until you maybe achieved a little bit of success, and then you were like, you know what? I'm matured to a certain age. I'm going to pay for that license. So now I'm going to get updates, and it's going to be fantastic. And, you know, all the karma is going to come back to the developers. But with iOS, there are such amazing tools, and you can pay for them. You can afford them. You can get everything you need. You can do video editing in iMovie, and you can do audio editing on all these amazing things. And the tools are better than what was there on the PC platform 10 years ago. And at you know, when I say fraction of a cost, we're talking the difference of a great mastering program. A mastering program costs $10 compared to $500, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all. that's a powerful thing, you know? And I think that it's really special. And part of that's existing only because of the pressure of being, you know, that the costs need to be lower on an iPad and an iPhone. But, you know, I would just say for anyone who hadn't thought about that, maybe that's something to explore if you're a producer, a content creator. There's so much cool software out there. And these are the guys that, you know, used to work for all these big companies, and they just like the game developers, they went indie, you know, and check it out. It's worth checking out, I think. Well, because the story you're hearing nowadays is that it's difficult to make a business out of this, and I think that that's true. But I think part of that it has to do with the maturity of people coming to the platform and being aware of what they can do with an iPad, an iPhone, an Android device, that Windows phone, all this stuff.
Dave, we haven't talked about what the cost is of the app. I think it's only like $10.99 or something like that. Is that correct?
It's $10. Yeah,
$10. Yeah.
Wow. You know that. I hear that. You know how much am I paying Adobe every month? $50. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, wow. You know, it goes back to what you just said, Dave. You know, it's. You know, I think of the thousands and thousands of dollars I have spent on software over the years. You know, probably a kid's worth of college education on software. You know, it's something that, you know, you look what's happening in the audio space then on the iOS devices and even video too. But, you know, I went to NAB and looking for a specific, basically I wanted graphics like ESPN has. You know, I want those nice CGI roles. You know, that, you know, it's, you know, 5 years ago, that was $100,000 to even think about having that type of a CGI overlay. The last time I was there, it was down in the $5,000 to $4,000 range. It's still high, but at some point, someone's going to get pissed off and they're going to say, man, can we do this cheaper? You know, number one, that they're tired of paying the price themselves. Maybe they'll build it. But, you know, $10, it's just amazing to me. You know, I think the most expensive piece of software I bought on my iPad was an audio control service that would allow me to control the audio on the TriCaster. It was $100. And I had no problem paying $100 for that because I knew what it did. And I could basically, the guys could be running the switcher. And if the audios were a little high, I could just drag them down if I needed to make a change while, you know, running the show. But at the same time, it had a specific utility that was only used like once or twice a year. You know, $10, man, oh man.
It's people, and you know, it seems ridiculous. And you say it's a cup of coffee, but that's people.
No, I don't think it's high. I think it's a great price. I want
people only have $10 to spend. Like a lot of people, they'll say, I'm going to spend $10 on apps. And then, you know, so they'll email us and say, listen, you know, if I buy your app, that's it for me this month.
Right.
So I really need to know if this is going to work.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to have to, you know, how people budget in for apps.
Yeah. There it is right there on my iPhone.
Nice.
You guys excited
Looks
about,
great.
You know, Tuesday,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah. Very, very cool. Hey, well, what do you think? What's your thoughts on what's going to happen on Tuesday? I think all the secrets are out, or are they going to have a surprise for us?
It'll be interesting. The watch is certainly the most interesting part, I think. You know, at this point, how much better can it get? We're already living in the future, right?
So, Dave, is Boss Jock going to run on the new iWatch?
Oh, wow.
Hey, if possible, what could you do with it? What would make sense? Something makes sense.
Something
like a recorder on your wrist, right?
Be a little bit of a different kind of UI, I would think. But
yeah, maybe it's the mic trigger. You could just hit the mic trigger that way.
I continue to give out hope that at some point they're going to surprise us with the Apple TV and allow us to have apps on the Apple TV. But I've been disappointed for about 3 years in a row, and this is primarily an iOS phone mobile reveal, so I'm not expecting them really to say anything. But I am hoping that they throw us a curveball and said, oh, by the way, we have one more thing. By the way, the Apple TV, it's going to be open to the App Store. We're going to be able to do apps on Apple TV. And if that happens, then Todd's going to do the jig. But I don't know. They've taken a long time to get that product to where I think it should be, and it isn't where it is. But I'm pretty biased on that too, because I want my own app on the Apple TV. It's what I want.
I mean, we were feeling the same way when we were doing Libsyn stuff and Wizard stuff. Same thing. It's like, yeah, you know, you're looking at that and drooling, and you know, only the big boys can get on there.
That's right.
But
Dave, so
maybe go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. So what's your thoughts on what's happening in the podcasting space now? You go way back to the early days, kind of like Todd and I. What's your thoughts on what's happening with podcasting here over the last year and a half or 2 years?
I think comedians certainly rule the roost this year, right? You watch At Midnight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone is introduced not by their Twitter handle, but by their podcast. How about that? You know, almost every night you have three comedians up there and they're introduced by the name of their podcast. And that's amazing. And the Twitter handle gets mentioned, but you know, for a while there we were our Twitter handles, and there it is. There's my Twitter handle. But but I think that's kind of a shift to say that I'm from the Comedy Bang Bang Show, from the Nerdist, from Geek News. You know, that's huge. That means that the brand of the podcast is now elevating. So like where we made that argument forever that you know, how important it was to have this podcast thing. We had to wait for everyone to get their Twitter on. And now it's got weight to it again to be a show, you know, to be a, and that's right. It's not just a show, it's a podcast.
Right.
You know, that was the butt of jokes on
that's right, and we're proud of it. It's a podcast. Damn it. We're proud of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what? That word didn't go. I'm surprised didn't go away. You know.
Well, there were some folks out here that we had these, you know, ups and downs, and it was kind of weird, you know, to watch. And you know, here we've been saying this is, you know, it's September. I am like 1 month away from being 10 years doing my show, fast approaching 1,000 episodes. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been doing this 10 years, and it's hard to believe. And yet, at the same time, I have some of the same exact frustrations now that I had 10 years ago. And it's not, and it's more on the business side than it is on the media side, the media stuff. It's all figured out. The brands are growing, people are growing their shows. There's a lot of great podcasts out there, but it's some of the same stuff. So I think we're starting to see a shift. You know, in January this year, I started to see a shift in the type of calls I was getting, which is good. The radio people are obviously heavily engaged. They want to get this figured out, and because they know that they're, you know, it's only a matter of time before the baby boomers, not the baby boomers, the Gen X folks grow up and they don't need a radio. Yeah.
They don't listen to radio. Yeah.
Yeah. And the millenniums, they don't need a radio. They're, you know, they're listening on their mobile device to whatever they want to listen to, but not the man is forced them to listen to. So, we're going to get them through attrition just on that alone. I might be 90 before it happens, but,
Todd, I was thinking about it. I've been actually doing this stuff for 16 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, I started out doing a show in a radio station, taking it home on a cassette tape and making an MP3 file.
Rob, you really date yourself when you say you were doing stuff on a cassette deck, you know.
You're lucky. So lucky. We're lucky. I think to know cassette tapes.
That's where it started,
man.
You know, to know, and to think of what we can do with the phone now compared to, you know, just remember when this thing kicked off, when podcasting kicked off, this didn't exist. The iPhone did not exist. You know, I've got a little.
Can I bring up something controversial?
I got a little archive back there that has my iPod back there that, you know, kind of kicked it off. Go ahead, Dave.
I want to stir up some controversy.
Sure.
Makes for good programming, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me mark the time here. Okay, go ahead.
Get ready for the controversy. This device, arguably the greatest growth machine vehicle for podcast listening. right?
Yeah.
We would all can all agree about that. Most people, and also the method of listening, probably the growth is happening over cell networks, right?
Right.
So it's time to drop the MP3 and move to a better format that is a more efficient codec to use less bandwidth, and it translates to listeners being able to listen more. That's what I'm going to say. That video people have evolved and moved through many codecs over a period of time where audio producers have stayed with MP3 to a fault. And I think at some point, it's time to move on to a more efficient codec for many reasons. And
so what codec do you think we should move to?
Well, see, I would say AAC.
Right.
I would say AAC. And for multiple reasons. One is a selfish one, which is to encode AAC. It's faster than encoding MP3. So in our application, it's more efficient to go to AAC because the chip has, you know, H.264 right, acceleration, right. Blah, 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 blah. Less battery usage and faster. But for the listener, really, at the end of the day, it's about the listener.
Mm-hmm.
If you're producing at, you know, 96 or you're producing at 112 or 128, you can bump down to a lower, to a smaller file if you switch to a better codec. And, you know, I think it's that's where the growth is. I do not understand why people continue to use. I understand why. The argument is that because it plays on every single right. device in the world. But so what? I think the growth is happening in devices that are happening over cell networks and that all play AAC without a problem. But now, on top of that, let's add insult to injury, which is, and I'm, this is where I would look to you guys as far as sponsor stuff is concerned. Sponsor reads, you know, we're still doing calling out for codes. You know, we're right. all, that's everyone's doing that, right? Netflix and
yeah.
And you guys and if you listen to, like, you know, Daring Fireball Gruber's show, I mean, it's the oldest school kind of sponsoring thing in the world. And because there's so many different listening methods, including, you know, all these new podcasting podcatcher clients, and now that we have CarPlay, you know, people are going to be listening in the car, that things like being able to bookmark a link from the show or say, you know, I would like to learn more about the sponsor, or I'd like to learn more about this call to action, it should somehow be embedded within the file. So, you know, I think it's interesting that Apple tried to give us a codec back in 2006, was it, or 5, when they created the enhanced podcasting format. And that was interesting. It did a few things. It was a better codec, and it had payloads, URLs, images. And I think that's what's needed is a payload system. So a smarter type of audio file. So like I said, there's going to be a point. I'm probably still wrong. I was wrong 2 years ago when I was calling for people to move to AAC, but at some point it's going to make sense to move to a smarter, better format. And, you know, being the people that are the backbone, you guys have been here forever grinding away. It's going to take a concerted effort, you know, to come up with something better, I think. And it's interesting that some of the guys at, like, I think it's called like Podigy and Allphonics. I mean, they're starting to experiment with concepts around like time code embedded payloads, right. Whether it's just links
yep.
or images or whatever. But, you know, listen, YouTube, again, with the YouTube comparison, they're doing all sorts of interesting stuff. They're pushing the envelope, and yet our audio formats have stagnated. And now I think it's to a fault because we're talking about we're using up people's data plans, and that's where the growth is, data plans. It's happening over cell networks in people's cars. That's where the new listeners are. So the more that we can do to get our files smaller, you know, that benefits everyone. It benefits hosting companies, right? Because that's smaller file, less bandwidth. It's going to benefit the listeners, you know. So that's it.
We lost Rob. It was so controversial.
He got bored.
He busted. So let's see if we can get him back. You know, the thing that... He must have completely crashed. Oh, there he is. What happened, Rob?
Oh, I had an audio failure here, so I couldn't hear you guys.
Oh, okay.
You fell asleep and your head hit the keyboard.
Yeah, I was so bored. No.
You know,
it was weird.
One thing that we did, you know, a while back, I think maybe 3 years ago, we introduced something called Metamarks, and we put it in PowerPress so that people could, you know, put this type of stuff in there, you know, so that it would work with MP3, so it would be embedded in the XML file. But we could never get anyone to adopt the ability to, and now we're starting to see some people trying to come up with their own solutions, but you know, it's so simple. I mean, it's so dumbfoundingly simple to be able to do that. AAC, obviously you can embed it and you can have a little something come up. I don't think it's going to be 100% effective because people generally are not looking at their phone when there is a, when they're listening to audio. But if they're online and looking on the web and listening to a show, we thought there would be the ability then to, you know, pop up a link or a cloud or something like that. And so I understand completely where you're coming from, Dave. And I think that YouTube had to do that because people are looking at the screen when they're doing stuff. But I think on the videos, I mean, the audio side, maybe that's why the adoption hasn't been as fast, is because there's been really, you know, people aren't looking at their screens. You know, I start something to play and stick it in my pocket. You know, I'm listening on my earbuds. So what do we have to do? We have to come up with some sort of a beep to make them go look at their phone to let them know that there's an ad for them to look at or a link. But we're starting to see more people use AAC. It's still in the single digit percentages, but still everyone, I agree with you, still using MP3, but most, even the set-top box players, let me think about, will they do AAC? I think they do. I think even the set-top box players do AAC, so I don't. But the problem is here's the weird thing. You're still predominantly over 70% of the people that are creating podcasts, at least less, and we haven't done one of these in a couple of years, are still producing on Windows machines. So I guess I don't know if Adobe Edition's capable of writing AAC or not. I don't think it is, but
I would think that, you know, I mean, you can create those files in the iTunes software too.
Yeah, you have to convert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
So you guys are talking about replacing MP3 with AAC. Is that what the conversation?
Yeah, that was conversation. That was Dave's, you know, controversy. And I understand where you're coming from on that, Dave, too, because we all like smaller media file sizes for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, it is a better codec. There's no question. The problem is the cross compatibility on playback, just not there.
Yep.
Well, I think it's on, you know, I'm gonna have to ask Angelo to start doing some look sees and see if we can figure out. I think we're tracking now about 140 different devices. And by device, I would mean Apple TV, a Roku, iPad, you know, the whatever version of, you know, a phone. But, you know, your Dave, you know, no matter what, even though we're tracking 140, 80% of them are on iOS. 7% is the other, and 13% is Android. So do we leave the other, you know, that 7%? And I don't know what the number of devices would be that would be left behind, but.
I guess the core of the argument I'm trying to make is that what's the biggest growth is happening on the cell phone, on the mobile phones, over data networks, not over Wi-Fi.
Yep. Right.
You know, streaming it in the car. Yep. You know, and now that you CarPlay, I think and Google's equivalent and Microsoft's equivalent, it's going to be a big deal. Well, if we see a watch on Tuesday, if we see home automation, which we know is coming, it's the bottom line of everywhere you go, the cloud, you can speak to your personal assistant, you know. But so much of our growth, I think, is happening outside of the home that it's to our benefit to allow people to digest more material, essentially, and incur less of a data penalty. It's more efficient, you know. And if we're talking That's why I say I wish a high-profile podcaster would do a test, switch to AAC for one episode, don't tell anybody. See if anyone notices.
Yeah, see, you know, if they get any
count
complaints.
How many. You got to anticipate some blowback. But, you know, at some point it's going to get below a 5%, 2%, 1%. At which point are you penalizing all your mobile customers when you could have gone to a more efficient, smaller codec?
Yeah.
You know?
And something that has some interactivity to it, too, that's already been built in from the beginning.
Right. And your MetaMarks thing I thought was, you know, I looked at when you published this, the initial spec on it. And that's, you know, you're hitting all the important parts. And that's another thing is because it may not necessarily be, well, one, I think they could talk to Siri. Siri, bookmark that link for me. Okay, you know, yep. You're sitting in the car and you're listening to a show, yep. And you want to do the Harry's shave thing. Yep. You know, you say, Siri, bookmark that for me. Or, you know, I'm talking about this article and you're listening to this article and you say, that's an article I'm going to want to admit, yep. You know, read when I get to sit down. Bookmark that for me, Siri.
Right, right.
But what's important is that we get to those, you know, universal usage so that then Siri just has to hook into that, you know, because podcasting, let's look at how it got embraced by Apple, yep. Embraced and augmented. You know, they added their own, you know, things on top of it. But it was largely because a really satisfying functional system was already there. This amazing, one of the only decentralized new media platforms, yep. Right, is podcasting. Yep. But it was because the hooks were all there. So now it's time, I think, to start at some point. Should be thinking about what the next gen hooks are, you know, to improve it. Because otherwise, if what I fear is that if we don't get ahead of that curve, then somebody else, like a, you know, one company will come and build enhancements on top of it, and then it makes more sense for people to listen there, you know, and then it becomes a silo consumption thing.
Well, and I think we're kind of seeing that a little bit already with a site like SoundCloud.
SoundCloud, exactly.
Yeah, and I think But Dave, I have to ask I have to raise the question about MP3 versus AAC is, you know, what's the real benefit in the short run for anybody making that transition? And I think there's going to be a loss of audience. And, you know, standards, I don't know, this is probably not the right word for it, but kind of standards helps propel a platform like this forward too. So, but change and improvement is needed, but also there's like this baseline, you know, of understanding, right? I mean, once we start throwing in ACC and the MP3, and I've seen this kind of happen. There's been a lot of podcasters that have put out AAC podcasts, and I think it may be something we all need to shoot for, and I think you're exactly right. I think there are a lot of platforms that support the AAC audio codec, you know, and podcasting could survive in that. But you would probably lose maybe 10 to 15% of your audience by making
that shift. You think it's that high, though? I guess what I'm saying is
probably.
I think it's probably less, because ultimately anything that can play back web video – anything that can play H.264 video is going to be able to play AAC audio. And that's, you know.
Yeah, and that's going to get more so. I mean, over time, it's not going the other way. I think certain genres of content where people consume stuff in areas. I mean, you're probably right. I mean, I think the more I think about it, the more I think AAC could be a standard that we all shift to. And it probably would kind of drive the agenda, right? Of making sure that all these other platforms are supportive of it. And if they don't support it, then they're kind of left to the side and they're not as relevant anymore too. So you kind of have that dynamic too. So I definitely see your point.
Hey, I want to point you guys, I'm looking for the email here, and this is kind of an interesting conversation. Let me see if I can bring this site up. Okay. DWN. Okay, so I saw someone post something in one of the community forums, mm-hmm. And it was about this company called Download Me. And what they're doing is they're helping bloggers, content creators, create apps easy, $15 a month. Get your blog on there, get your podcast on there, and so forth. And so I'm like, cool, let's call them. Let's see what it does. And so I call them, and man, they're like, yeah, let's rock and roll. Let's do something. So we'll do a demo app for you. And I read on their site, it says features, media players, YouTube, Vimeo, iTunes, SoundCloud, Bandcamp. So how this progresses is we've got your app mocked up, but we've got a problem. And I'm like, okay, what's the problem? He says, you're using, are you on SoundCloud? No. Are you on iTunes? Yep. Okay. And they're, you know, they're trying to figure out, they did not build a MP. They didn't build in their app an MP3 player. They were relying on YouTube, Vimeo, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp to provide the player. And I'm like, I got 23,000 podcasters that would like an app that does what, you know, and it's really, I mean, what they have done is like, holy crap. And for people like me that create content, it'll intermix the blog content. It'll take multiple feeds and it'll mash it all up together. What they have done is really, really incredible. And I mean, they put it together in like 30 minutes and had it, you know, ready for me to go to the, and really I could have done it, but they did it for me. And, but they didn't create a media player. And I'm like, it's just an MP3. And I told him, I said, podcasters use an MP3, AAC, MP4, M4V. Those are the four really kind of the primary formats. So they're not going to go back and add a media player that will work within their app that'll do just a native link to an MP3. So kind of, Dave, going back to your point, this is a little bit construed, but they didn't even, they were so focused on this, the music people, they didn't think about, they said, oh yeah, we'll do podcasting, but they really didn't realize that most podcasters don't use SoundCloud. And so they're going to go back and fix it yet. But
yeah, I think.
But you know, here's,
they scare me.
Yeah, you know, SoundCloud though. Yeah, they've been in beta for 2 or 3 years with their thing. I'm not worried about them. They're a great second point of presence. Yeah, second place to put
distribution. Yeah, but you know, a lot of podcasters look at them as the primary, and I think, you know, I think I've talked to a few of them, and they oftentimes regret it. After they've done it for a while, because, you know, they built a big community there, and it just, it's not a podcast first platform. It's a streaming platform.
And they're also get venture funded. And what happens when the priorities change? And we've all seen, you know, oh, that was a cool trick we did for a little while. It's a distraction. Let's get rid of it, and then people are screwed. So,
but if they want to own, because I think. You guys think this too. This is a preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Here. But, you know, this format here with this talk, it's like talk radio.
Yeah.
You know, right? And the future of that is still for the taking for a company to emerge to be a dominant player, you know? And why wouldn't somebody want that? Because that's a sponsor rich. People even pay for content, you know, this sort of deep rich content. It's basically satellite radio, you know, XM Sirius. This makes more sense for it to be in this format. My point is that companies will emerge that want to eat that space as quickly as possible. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. But I think SoundCloud is like, look, we want to eat all audio. We want to eat it all. Stitcher's the same thing. Stitcher was the first partner on Apple's CarPlay thing. Yeah. Why wasn't it Libsyn? Why wasn't it Blueberry? Why wasn't it, you know, somebody else? It wasn't. It was Stitcher, you know? I think there's a good land grab potential, and SoundCloud is innovating with their player is fantastic. The ability to comment in line, that's a really rich thing. How come we don't have that? How come there isn't great open source stuff based on either the MetaMarks deep rich content links or the Podigy? They call it Podlove. I think that's what it's called. Podlove is their standard. Same thing. But why aren't there 15 really awesome players that you can plug into WordPress, or, you know, that render well in a Twitter card? You know, we don't have that. We say, here's the raw MP3,
yeah,
you know, do. And that's why this company's not properly supporting it, you know? Yep. There should be better players, and there should be better, you know, something with the format. Maybe it all lives in the feed. Maybe it lives in the metadata around it. But, you know, I just think that, that there is space to make improvements there. And if somebody's going to emerge and make those improvements, better that it's in the community rather than one silo entity that wants to be the YouTube of,
right.
And, yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying.
And, you know, well, and the, go ahead, Rob.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to mention, I mean, a little, you know, a little perspective sometimes is helpful in these discussions because, I mean, I've seen a lot of this stuff in the past. There's very little that's going on in the podcasting space right now or in the new media space that hasn't been done, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. You know, and the whole thing of, you know, search inside of audio, you know, I hear people talking about, oh, that's the next big thing is, you know, need to be able to comment in content and things like that. And I think we're kind of reaching a point where I think those things are, I think becoming a little more, kind of more accepted and more kind of appreciated. But if you go back 5 or 6 or 7 years, and even further back, there were companies that tried to do all this and completely failed. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen to SoundCloud or any of these other newer companies, but a lot of what we see or what we think is new and hot now has been tried by other companies in the past and didn't work out for whatever reason. You know, maybe they were too early to the game. But there's really very little that I see in the marketplace today around spoken word audio that hasn't been done in the past. So I think we're still in this. The area that I think you just talked about, Dave, is in the car. I think that's the next big thing is audio consumption in the car using streaming and digital technology. And that AM/FM dial is going to drop to the bottom of the apps list. You know, it's not going to be at the top. And
along with the cassette player.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, cassette. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's the big point of inflection here is what's going to happen in the car. And I think, you know, over the last few years, you know, it was the smartphone, and now we're going to phase into this next phase of the car. And then I think, Dave, you kind of alluded to this earlier too around context. And I know Scoble's been talking about this for the last year and a half, where, you know, the smart agent technology, you know, Siri and Cortana and this technology over time, you know, with all the sensors that we have in our phone, these phones are going to know where we are, what we're doing, what we like, when we like to do certain things. And it's just going to make that available and easy for us in the car or in the home, in our home automation stuff. So it'll learn the type of content that we like and that we want to consume at different points in our lives and maybe if we have an opening in our lives or an opportunity to continue listening to a podcast, the device will remind us that, you know, you started listening to the new media show and would you like to continue, you know, because you had a break in your schedule or you were someplace where you were just sitting, not moving around and the sensor picked it up. And so I think that, you know, the smart software and the smart technology that I think is coming, and we're on the cusp of it, just like we were talking about with the 8-core processors. We start getting into that realm of technology, and the sky starts to open up on what's possible. And so, anyway, I just wanted to throw that out and kind of give some timeline perspective on all this discussion.
Let's not forget that the AM, FM, Clear Channels of the world are a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yep.
And that they are going to do everything in their absolute power to make sure that Ford, GM, Toyota, that when you turn the radio on, the first thing that comes up is FM. It's just like your TV. It's the battle over HDMI-1 on your television set. So if, and I think Ford is probably the closest, if Ford comes up and makes their Sync or whatever iteration they're on now, when that car starts up and that screen loads, and it is AM, FM, app, map. You know, you can set your screen up the way you want it and control what apps you're going to have access to. Game over. That's when it completely changes.
Yep.
But until they change the default, turn the engine on, and it loads up your FM station by default, because you can absolutely be guaranteed that the radio people are going to get their checkbooks out, and they're going to make sure that FM is the first thing that comes up when your car's turned on.
Well, I think that's a perfect parallel, that it is like the Comcast box.
Yeah.
That they don't want you to just go cut the cord. But, you know, I think the moment you fire up the car and it says, are you a Google user? Are you a Siri user? Or are you a Microsoft Cortana user? Who's your virtual assistant? I think that's it. Because your virtual assistant already, Siri already knows your podcasts, right? For us. But everything else, Siri knows everything else. It's going to be, you know, it's going to fire up and that screen's going to say, who's your assistant? You know, and it's going to be the top three in what, you know, it's probably Cortana, Siri, and Google. Maybe Facebook.
And maybe Siri's going to say, hey, by the way, there's a new media show episode. There's a new XXX. You have this available and go, you know. And
yeah.
But, you know, going back to the – and, Rob, I know you had something there, so don't lose your train of thought. But just remember, those people that have those sandboxes, they're under extreme pressure to make things happen. And SoundCloud is a venture-funded company. They have to make money. At some point, the cash is going to run out. Same thing with Stitcher. They have to make money. And if they don't make money, they can have all the tech in the world and it's going to make a bit of difference. They're either going to get swooped up by someone and they're going to invoke their own agenda. And that usually is swooped up by a big company like Apple.
Follow the money is the
Follow
is
the money.
Yeah. I was just going to talk about your comment about AM and FM, and I know, I totally get what you're saying about, you know, that they're going to break out the checkbooks to make AM FM still, you know, top of mind in the car. Though I think, you know, Dave had a really good point that most people are going to start thinking about these digital agents, I think, is their primary starting point. But that's not to say that the AM FM couldn't do that. But I think what's going to happen with AM FM is they're going to be forced to transition over to AM/FM being more of an app platform. And you can see that a little bit with Clear Channel on with the iHeartRadio folks. You know, that's part of that kind of long-term digital strategy to transition people, you know, and give a certain generation access to how they want to consume content from Clear Channel, right?
Yep.
It may not be from AM/FM radio, but it's still going to be coming from Clear Channel. And at the end of the day, Clear Channel's a media company. They should care less whether it's off of an analog broadcast or streaming off of the internet. They should care less about that. It's just getting access to the revenue stream is what they need to be focused on.
Well, and when the sooner they go digital, the more digital money comes to us. You know, that's what that's the simple fact of the matter too. So.
Yep.
Well, believe it or not, Dave, you made it all the way to the end, man. We're right here at almost an hour and a half.
Hey, I knew that he probably would. He's just one of those guys, you know. I mean, he's been in the space for so long, and he's such a great guy. Yeah.
You know, and
I had fun.
And, you know, I think you bring some good perspective, Dave. It's good, you know, you're not necessarily disconnected from the space, but at the same time, you've got a you have a different perspective now down the road. I think it's a good one. It's a good one to make. You know, it's really made me kind of sit back today and think a little bit about this AAC issue, you know, because we've been like, you know, we're all been hardcore MP3 zealots. Why?
Yep.
You know, why have we been MP3 zealots? Well, I think part of it, too, is us non-primary Apple guys are like poo-poo AAC because it's Mac. So there may have been a dividing line there too, as that's Mac and this is
that's exactly, but it's not. I mean, I agree with Dave. It's not so much the case anymore.
Yeah, that's true. It's completely agnostic. Hey, I did want to say that there is going to be a major announcement next week with something I'm involved in. I'm just waiting for the press release to be draft. I can't say more than that, but very excited to make a major announcement next week. So exciting stuff happening with me personally and my business. So let's leave it at that. Personal business, not Raw Voice business.
Todd, all I can say is you're the master of the tease. That's all I can say.
Well, it's what's going to be.
Todd, I think I know what it is, but I'm not gonna steal your thunder.
It's okay. I'll tell you after we go off live, so you won't be in the loop. I haven't even told my wife yet, so I'm waiting to tell her at the opportune moment. So it's if my wife doesn't know, I'm really holding it close to the cuff. So Dave, so then are you guys ready for iOS 7 with Boss Jock?
8, yeah.
Oh,
well,
8, yeah.
We just updated our audio bus library, which is it's a protocol for apps to talk to each other. So we're getting there, but you always got to expect the worst with these iOS updates. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we didn't talk about that part. And Dave, that's a really good tease to a real important trend that's happening with apps right now is deep linking between apps. And the like what I call the webification of apps is clearly on track. So I don't know what you think about that. Yep.
But everyone, we want to make sure that you get over there and throw Dave some money, man. You go over there and it's ten
just
bucks.
Cash. Just kind of just throw it at him.
It's 10 bucks. If you're a podcaster, load this thing on your device just because you can. You never know when the opportunities. For 10 bucks, throw the man a, help him out and make his business grow.
That's exactly what I did too, Todd. I have it on all my devices, and I paid for it.
I will be the first to say that that I haven't, but I will post show here. I'll go grab this, but definitely more people the better, and it allows Dave to have more resources money wise to do this thing. So, boss,
I'm blushing.
BossJockStudio.com. And I have to give you guys, Dave, here's one thing I will say too, is that, Rob and I, we have a good time jostling to each other back and forth in the podcasting space. We're definitely fun competitors with one another. But the podcasting space needs to give you, you guys saved our asses in the early days. And I'm not going to discount that at all with what you guys did in rolling out Libsyn in the, I'm probably taking away my own business here, but you guys definitely, definitely saved and were instrumental in making sure the podcasting space, and still today, you guys got, a huge business over there, but I appreciate it, and I appreciate your contributions to the space and what you continue to do. I really do.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's been so much fun, and, the early days, it was like we couldn't have, we were breaking every weekend. So
those days. I mean, yeah.
This was the time before S3.
Right.
It was a very difficult period in the history of the internet.
It's true.
Well, you had to own all your own servers and co-locate them. I did the same thing with my, I hosted other shows too. I was like a mini Libsyn back in the early days myself. I had like four or five co-located 2U servers that were in two different co-location facilities, and I was hosting and streaming, radio shows. Stuff.
There's a story behind that. That's just, you wouldn't believe how nasty that whole scene was.
That would be a good story. Maybe we'll have to do that someday, is have you on and tell that history story, because I think that's important. I will say this, I remember starting my show and then doing episode one, doing episode two, and getting this email from my hosting provider. I said, "You're out of bandwidth." I'm like, "What? I'm out of bandwidth? What do you mean I'm out of bandwidth?" And I went over and I'm like, "I was out of bandwidth." I'm like, "Okay, how do I fix this?" And this is pre-Libsyn, I said, "Well, you buy another hosting account." So I went and bought another hosting account, another provider. I think at the beginning I had like 3 Dreamhost accounts, 2 Bluehost. I had, I had shared hosting accounts everywhere. And what I would do, and they were each mapped to a domain, I would put I'd put one episode on one hosting service, and then I would move it. And you would pray that the audience growth was not so far ahead of the, and you're like, "Oh man, they're giving me a terabyte of, And then you're like, you're like switching the URL day two to the next hosting provider just so you could keep it. Was, I mean, it was incredible.
just kind of a mess when it comes to your download metrics too.
I'm sure that there is media sitting somewhere that I'm still paying for that I have no idea. You know, it's just
good old days.
Oh man, yeah, definitely good old days. But okay, cool.
Robin, frustrating good old days.
Yeah, yeah, Rob, what's on tap for next week?
I've got a host of a Podcast One show called Ask Women that's going to be on. Her name is Marnie. So she's another female fire plug in this space. So I'm going to have her on to talk about what she does.
We need a lot of women fire plugs in the space. We need to bring more ladies into the space. So I think it's great. Yep. Very, very, very cool. All right. So cool. Dave, man, excited to see what you're doing there. And, definitely going to get, I'm going to play. I was probably spending the rest of the day playing with this thing. So
awesome.
Being a geek, a true geek, you gotta dive into this app.
And of course, and the next thing is it's the $9.99 plus I got to go out and buy the camera kit. That's, you know, that's a given. So that's a trip to Amazon today for sure.
$29. Yep. Yep. Lightning USB Apple connector. It'll be worth it though. Just plug in that ATR. You have an ATR 2100 over there, right?
I don't. I'm one of the few people that don't, but I have a variety of other USB mics. But, you know, that probably is another purchase on Amazon, too. So, you know.
Ching on Todd.
Yeah. But, you know, it's all about the toys, right? Boys and their toys.
Oh, you've got lots of toys, Todd. Yeah. I know you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just look in the background.
Yeah. And stuff that's no longer used. That's the what do you want to call that? That's the boneyard back there for devices that are. Yeah, still viable, but they're like of yesteryear. I just reminded everyone, hey, we're on newmediashow.com now. The full site is there. The email link is on the website. There's a contact page, there's guest appearance list, there's an about page, all that stuff now. You actually learn a little bit about both Rob and I, and we got our bios on there. So we've got our own little home now, and we're going to be doing more with this. So we hope that you'll join us every Saturday that we are doing this, which was for the foreseeable future. We're live at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 noon Eastern on YouTube Live. But get subscribed via iTunes. And the links are there on all the other cool places that the show is. But long time coming. I'm glad we're finally at that point where we can have a home of our own. Part of the Geek New Central family, of course. But everyone take care. Rob, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
And we'll see everyone
Dave,
next time.
Dave, it was good seeing you. Yep. Bye.
I had a blast, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, Dave, take care. And everyone else, we'll see you next time. Aloha.